Okay, no worries.
Sorry about that.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Okay, so the agenda of the call, or the draft agenda, is basically to cover, firstly, looking at what the overall goals of the review are, secondly, going through the document itself and getting input from people on that, and then thirdly, just getting a sense, just preliminary at this stage, of what would be required from the constituencies in terms of information, etc., that would be needed by an external reviewer. Are there any other changes or suggestions to the agenda?
Just at the end, Bruce, it's Marilyn. Can we spend a few minutes in preparation or planning for our interaction with the board?
Okay.
Bruce Liz here.
Yes.
I'm going to be taking notes as I go along, and I understand that Glenn is recording the call. I don't guarantee that my typing will keep up with the analysis. So if people have substantive things, do feel free to email them to me to save my...
Yeah, in fact, Glenn, are you able to do minutes for the call?
Yes, of course, please.
Thank you. But yeah, as with council calls, if you're sort of making a substantive statement, it's useful to sort of follow it up with an email. It just makes it much faster to get minutes and things like that done, if that's done.
To whom does that go? To Glenn?
Yes, to Glenn. Okay. So I think just dealing with item one then, which is just and partly in response, I think, to a question that Ross had as to what is the goal. The goal itself of a review is basically part of the ICANN bylaws themselves, and the bylaws require all parts of the ICANN organisational structure to be reviewed every 3 years, just as part of ICANN's ongoing improvement, I guess. And for all parts of the reviews, the goal of the review is in two parts. The first is whether that organisation has a continuing purpose in the ICANN structure, and secondly, if so, whether any change in structure or operations is desirable to improve its effectiveness. Now, the criteria and standards of the review are approved by the board. And in this case, the board has asked the GNSO Council to prepare a terms of reference document with input from the board, which would then be used to guide an outside consultant or an independent person to conduct the review. The terms of reference document is due to be completed in time for the board to approve it at the meeting in Vancouver. So in terms of the meetings that we're holding, this meeting is primarily to, I guess, inform members of the GNSO of the upcoming review, to get input from the GNSO community, and then we will produce a draft in terms of reference as an outcome of this meeting. That draft will go to the board, and then we'll be inviting the board to provide input to that draft and engage the board in a teleconference in 2 weeks' time. After that teleconference, we will hopefully have a close to final draft, and that draft will eventually go to the board for approval. So that's basically the sort of goal and I guess high order steps for developing the terms of reference. Are there any questions or comments on the goal?
Bruce, this is Brett Fawcett. I just want to let you know I just joined.
Oh, thank you, Brett. Okay, so then when we then look at, well, what outcomes are we seeking? One of the things, and just to provide, I guess, a bit of background for people that weren't involved in the review of the council itself, the council was reviewed last year, and basically the outcome of that review was the council did have a role, and I guess essentially they're saying the GNSO has a continuing role. And then there was about 20 recommendations for areas where the council could improve its processes and procedures. The sorts of things that was, or if you like, the policy or the review questions that were asked, there was about 9 questions. They were, what were the policy achievements of the GNSO? How was the GNSO doing outreach, geographic diversity and transparency? What was the policy development process? How did the staff support that development? How did the policies get implemented and were people complying with those? How were policy issues raised? What was the pattern of votes? There was a discussion about whether we should have two versus three representatives, and the view was that we should have three per constituency. And then how does the GNSO communicate to the ICANN community as a whole? So that exercise involved a lot of fact collecting, mostly done by Glenn, in just collating, I guess, all the different votes and meetings that were held. And then people were interviewed for their views on that. So, and the outcome of that was a set of recommendations. So I guess I'd like to more or less throw it open to the group here, and particularly people that have a role in managing work within the constituencies, is getting a sense of what sort of outcomes would we like to see. Do we want to see areas where we could get perhaps assistance in doing administration of things like membership and meeting organisation or collecting payments, or do we want assistance in terms of people to facilitate policy development? It's really quite open, but I'd be interested in just getting an idea of what the constituencies would like to see as an output, or what constituencies would find useful in terms of an output from the review that would help the constituencies be effective.
Bruce Ross here, if I may.
Who's that, sorry?
This is Ross.
Ross, yes.
I think both from a constituency perspective and from a council perspective, and I'd characterize this as one of my personal hopes. I wouldn't get as specific as the things you've outlined, but I think if we can get to a point where we as constituencies and we as council, we as a GNSO in general, have a better understanding of the perceptions that third parties have within the ICANN community and what their expectations are for us, I think we'll have a very, very good slate of work upon which we can focus and continue to improve ourselves. So that's really my expectation for this.
If I can just clarify that, so you're seeking information on perceptions.
I'm looking for feedback.
Feedback, right. Okay. Well, I'll just take a cue, I think, at this point. I'll just try and capture as we go. So was that Marilyn?
Anyone else like to
comment?
Ken Stubbs, too, please.
Ken Stubbs. Anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Marilyn.
I support what Ross just said. I think that it's very important for us to have feedback, because often misperceptions develop when we aren't able to have a dialogue or clarify or close the gap, so to speak, on mm-hmm. that. So I fully support what Ross just said. I think also I'm looking for improvements, and have been for some time, in not in assistance in running our constituency, but in the kinds of information that are generally available to anyone in the community to explain ICANN and what ICANN does, and to point people to the appropriate constituency, or ALAC in that case, in order to get involved and active in ICANN. And I think it may be possible that we could use a single drafted resource that is more reflective of input from the constituencies as a recruitment mechanism, so that any time an ICANN staff person, for instance, is speaking at a conference or doing something of that nature, there's very usable information about here's how to get involved in ICANN, here are the constituencies, here's the contact points, and then as a constituency, we should take the responsibility for having a point of contact both on our website and available. So there is that that ongoing feedback in that case, or perhaps recruitment of interested parties to follow up with the appropriate constituency. So not looking for them to run the constituency, but not looking for staff support to run the constituency, but more of a centralized, more effective or representative portrayal of how to get involved in the constituencies.
And so if I could summarise that, it's sort of, I guess, recommendations and assistance around recruitment and membership and outreach. Is that kind of what...
No, it's more, it might start with, so when I can staff are speaking, or the CEO is speaking, or the chairman of the board is speaking, or you are speaking, you know, that there's always a plug and the appropriate information for referring the parties and the audience back to the appropriate constituency, or the ALAC, in order to encourage them to get involved.
Okay. Ken Stubbs?
Yeah, Bruce, we have, over the last few years especially, developed a perception in the outside community, in my opinion, that we don't act quickly enough and decisively enough in quite a few matters, especially when it comes to consensus policy development. One of the reasons I think this happens, we constantly try to pin this on the fact that we don't have adequate resources, or that we don't have adequate staff support, or whatever it is, but I think one of the basic problems that we have is that we create timelines and expectations that are, frankly, in most cases, incapable of being met for two reasons. Number one, our organization consists of a lot of diverse constituencies, some of which are able to operate more effectively because they have full-time people employed by members of the constituency whose jobs it is, basically, is to facilitate this kind of a process, as opposed to other constituencies, and I'll use the non-commercial as an example, where the majority of the people who are participating are doing it in a volunteer capacity. I think we need to take a very close look at the timelines, and let's try to create a much more realistic set of expectations. One of the things we also need to do is to take a very close look at the way in which the constituencies operate. If we don't feel that the constituency is operating effectively in managing the capacity to deal with GNSO consensus policy development, then my suggestion would be that we comment or make comments to the constituency executive committee members and try to help them do this. Let me give you an example. Certain constituencies, I'll use two examples, for instance. Number one, correct me if I'm wrong, Ross or Tim. The registrar constituency requires votes in many circumstances before the constituency can, one, either make comments on specific policy developments when they're requested, or two, in some cases, when the constituency representatives need to vote on specific activities.
Yeah, actually, Ken, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. The constituency requirement is, in order for us to put forward an official position, it has to be ratified by a majority of the constituency. But there are no such encumbrances on our capability to vote or to put forward positions. You know, for instance, the comments we submitted this morning were not the official statement of the constituency, and we were thus able to forward them on that basis.
Okay. But I think we would point out that given the fact that you are... there has to be an adequate timeline in order for the constituency to be able to solicit, inform, and arrive at some sort of consultation in a process like that. And in some cases, it's just not possible to meet the timelines. And I'll use as an example the recent Who Is request for comments. I believe that five of the seven constituencies, or maybe even more than that, were unable to meet the timelines that were requested for public comment. Now, I don't think it's because the constituencies aren't doing a good job, but rather I think the process does not take into consideration the fact that constituencies need the time in order to operate effectively within their bylaws. So let's take a close look at expectations and let's arrive at more practical timelines. If not, we just appear to be dragging our feet. I'll make one more comment and then I'll step aside. In some cases, I've seen situations where the community has called for action that was just, from a practical standpoint, impossible to do within the timelines. And I will use as an example for that the registry's policy development process that was just recently passed up to the board. The original request for that, I believe, came in November of 2003. It took roughly 19 months to get something through. If that's the case, we're so far outside of our own definitive guidelines for consensus policy development, it makes us, it just doesn't look right. So I hope we can take a look at that, please. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken. Anyone else like to comment at this point?
Well, I think it's speaking for the registrars.
Yep.
And perhaps for all of you, but I think the time required to do the job is a function of the square of the number of members.
Yes. The larger the constituency, the more work involved in just managing administration and stuff. Is that what you mean, Bob?
Right. And we're up now to, I want to say, 59 members. And after all the work it has been to get them all verified and paid, 20 or fewer vote on an issue, and there was one which was a very important issue, which I think when I got 19 votes.
One of the things I've found over time with the council is what the registrar constituency tends to do is have a very formal voting process via an email voting system. And we used to do quite a few votes that way on the council as well. What I've tried to do, because I know the overhead of running that Glenn was running these votes and having to chase everybody down to get them to vote, was I found it's easier just to schedule another council meeting and to do a vote verbally than it was to actually run email votes. And I think one of the things we might want to learn at the constituency level is perhaps what different constituencies do very well and what other constituencies could learn from that, and likewise, what does the council do well? Can some of that be translated into constituency processes and vice versa? Because I tend to think a lot of the constituencies are grappling with similar problems, but we're using different solutions. We might be using different software or different bank accounts or whatever the details are, and there could be some overall efficiencies at the GNSO level of using some common systems and common methods to do things.
Bruce?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would like to make another comment. You know, I think we also have to be respectful as we go through this process that our constituencies are different from each other, and not leap into an assumption that one size fits all in the practice of either managing a constituency or supporting it. I say that because, in general, business users will be probably, and ISPs within a class will probably be perhaps more consistent in a position than an organization as diverse in perspective as the at-large would be, just using those two examples. So I just also want to make one comment in support of one of the points that you were making, I think, Ken, and that is reminding people that when we approved the PDP, many of us actually opposed the timelines that were established in the PDP as quite unrealistic. And the compromise was, okay, we're going to live with it for a while, but we recognize the timelines have to be modified. So I think I would support the idea that we have to be pragmatic about establishing timelines that we can meet, and different policy issues may require different timelines.
Yeah, one of the outcomes, actually, of the review of the council was that changes are needed to the PDP timelines. There is a need to formalise current practice, not least to ensure that the GNSO operates in accordance with its own bylaws and procedures. The structure of the PDP needs to be maintained, but it needs to acknowledge that different policy issues require different types of work and therefore different timeframes. So that was one of the outcomes of the previous review. And one of the things I'm just keen to make sure is we don't kind of reinvent the wheel in this next stage of the review, that we don't just end up producing what we just produced.
I think that's right.
Well, Bruce, Philip here, if I could just get in a word. We've been talking about timelines a moment ago. Our own timeline on this call is now 30 minutes into it, and we do seem to be talking about solutions that may come out of a review rather than the terms of the review itself. And indeed, we have already been erring in what I had cautioned in my earlier email submission this week in terms of duplicating recommendations that are already clearly made in the council review, as you've just confirmed. So just a little watch out for the clock against us.
That's right, yeah. But I also think, Philip, that part of developing a terms of reference is also getting a sense of what you hope to achieve.
Sure, direction.
So that's why I'm having a bit of discussion on this. I'm not obviously trying to create the solutions here, but I just want to get a sense of what would we want to see at the end of this, and then when we're looking at the terms of reference, is it actually going to achieve that? So that's the purpose of this discussion. I'd like just to invite a couple of others that haven't spoken yet from different constituencies. Tony Holmes from the ISPs, have you got any comment from an ISP perspective?
Hello, Bruce. Nothing. I think I want to particularly add at this stage. We have discussed this in the constituency, but there will be some issues coming up, which I think, as ISPs, we would like to put into the pot. But at this stage, it's probably a little early to do that.
Okay. Nicholas Lagergren from the Intellectual Property constituency.
Yeah, same comment here as Tony just made. Bruce, you're not supposed to put a European on the spot in August, you know. No, just kidding.
That's right.
But this is something that the constituency is starting to look at, and we'll have comments, more specific comments, very soon.
Good, thank you. And Avery Doria?
Yeah, it's something I'm still trying to figure out. Really identify.
Sorry, we can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
It's really difficult, sort of, from the what is a NOMCOM nominee's constituency other than, you know, sort of the those who aren't covered by other constituencies. So there's certainly not any formal methodology for going to those not covered by other constituencies, but there is sort of a generally wandering through discussions with those various, whether it's at large groups or civil society groups, and there's also just looking at the sort of general constituency and the issues of, you know, ICANN community, but it's difficult to really talk about what is a NOMCOM nominee-specific constituency.
Yes, no, I guess I was really just seeking kind of just general feedback as a relatively independent member of the council and just the sorts of things that you might like to see. So I don't have to answer that now, but, you know,
okay. I definitely think we have to do something about the timeliness issue.
Bruce, Novak, can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I just would like to appreciate what Ken Stubb said about the difference of the different constituencies. I mean, the non-commercial constituency always suffers from the fact that we are in different parts of the world, and we do not have a strong secretariat or a similar structure to do the work. And I think this has been recognized, and I think it also has to be appreciated that we try to do our work within these limits. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. And Alec Wilson?
Bruce, it's Alec. Thank you for that. I guess my comment is that the terms of reference as they exist, I have no issue with. However, the scope of the review is likely to be constrained by the time constraints placed upon the reviewer and the ability, therefore, to interview widely. I guess I would, my comment there is that the amount of time allowed for the review should be sufficient to allow wide consultation rather than seeking inputs through email to lists.
Yeah, certainly I think one of the things that worked well in the last review was there was extensive use, I guess, of interviewing individuals rather than just, you know, relying on a public comment forum of some form. So, yes, I think that's right. And then partly then comes down to budget as to how big a... It's not just time, it's also budget, how much time, how money I can wish to spend on doing a review.
Yes.
Let's see, who else do we have? Maria from the chair of the registry constituency, did you have any sort of perspectives from the point of view of, you know, management within the constituency and any things that you'd like to see come out of it? We've lost Maria.
Sorry, I had on mute. Apologies. I'm still here.
Go ahead, Maria.
I had an observation that stems from the discussion that was earlier and that I'd like to share, and those who know me probably know what I'm going to say, but I think it is very important to discuss as to what we want to achieve from this review, but we should not forget that there are ICANN bylaws and there are certain goals for the review already described, and there are certain benchmarks defined in the bylaws. For example, how a PDP process should work. And I think that you would like to see the review just happen.
I'm sorry. I didn't actually understand what Maria said.
Okay.
Maria, partly because I couldn't hear you very well. Sorry.
I can dismiss, Marilyn. What I'm saying, and just a comment, is that I think that the review has its objectives set by the bylaws. And whatever expectations we may wish to have from the review, I think, are very important and they need to be discussed, but we should be mindful that the objectives are set.
Okay, but if I understand correctly, Maria, what you're saying is that one of the... there are timelines in the bylaws, and so the review should specifically...
I'm not saying timelines for the PDP itself, no. That, I mean, if this is something that needs to be changed, that needs to be changed. I think it's important that it is changed, but I had the impression that... part of this discussion is what this review should achieve, the review of the GNSO Council.
Yes.
And if it is an act that is prescribed by a corporate document for it to be completed, I think we should be mindful that it needs to be done the way it is prescribed.
Yes, that's right.
Whatever expectations we might have had.
Yeah, and I think by and large the review of the GNSO Council did find that the GNSO Council was adhering to its... to the steps in the PDP, but the timeline was the thing that was not followed.
And I think that, yes, in this context very much, I think it would be very good to have an independent feedback as to the adherence to the PDP process. And
adherence to the PDP process, right, okay.
Yes, and it is conceivable that the timelines need to be changed. We had that adherence and we shared that experience.
Okay. And Mike Pallage, Mike is an elected member of the board, elected from the GNSO. So, Mike, I guess you've had both a lot of time spent within the GNSO as former chair of the registrar's constituency and also on the board. What are your kind of perspectives as of what outcomes do you think we should be trying to achieve?
As I sort of said in my email last evening in response to Ross's email, I think the two things that I think would be important is to focus on is what is the outcome, again, the perception both from a board and a community standpoint of what is the outcome of the GNSO process with regard to policy. And then the second question would be how would you rank or rate the process which develops those recommendations? So it's sort of, if you will, looking at the outcome of what is produced, and then how do you evaluate the process involved in producing that outcome. So that would that to me, I think, is my would be my focal point of this process.
So what you'd be looking at there, Mike, is saying that there was a particular policy, let's call it Policy X. What was the outcome of that policy? And also, how was that policy arrived at? What was the processes used? And did they adhere to the...
Correct. And if I could, if I could just expand for a minute, there are some recommendations on policy that come from the council, and I'll use, for example, the transfers. When the transfers policy came to the board, there was a lot of depth. It was not two-dimensional, it was three-dimensional. There was an extensive report, there was minority, there was majority. There was a lot of documentation as to how some of the different members within the constituencies felt, minority and majority of reports there. So there was a lot of breadth and depth to that particular recommendation. When that goes to the board, that allows, I think, the board to make a much more informed decision. If a recommendation comes to the board that may not have that depth, what happens is it then becomes a little more difficult. And part of what I think I've heard from some of the people here today is, you know, what some of the resources that they need to help in getting, if you will, the ability to get those comments on the record, get it up from, if you will, starting at the constituency up to the council and then making it to the board, having that audit or record trail there, I think is something that is very important. But again, needs to recognize the challenges within each constituency, because you know, the registries are not the registrars, they're not the business, they're not the non-commercial users. So I think that's one of the things that I'd be looking at.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Okay, so that to me has kind of got a sense of the kind of things people are wanting to see. We know, and as Maria pointed out, the goals of the review are basically in the bylaws. The other thing that's in the bylaws is with respect to constituencies directly. There's a statement in the constituency that basically says that a constituency each constituency maintains its recognition as long as it represents the interests globally of the communities it states it represents and shall operate to the maximum extent feasible in an open and transparent manner and consistent with procedures designed to ensure fairness. So that's, if you like, at the council level, like I guess as others have pointed out, one of the guiding things that we can be evaluated against is have we followed the processes of the policy development process. And then the only thing that you could probably evaluate constituencies against at the bylaw level is probably that paragraph, which is basically saying, is the constituency representing the interests globally of its community, and is it operating in an open, transparent manner? So that's probably an objective test, I suppose, that the reviewer should use for each constituency. And then, in answering that question, which would be basically yes, the constituency has a continuing role. Then, what are the areas for improvement? So that's, I guess, the end of section one. Section two of the agenda is really saying, okay, the ICANN staff, Liz Williams, has put together some initial areas for the criteria and review. They're in under headings of representativeness, authority, effectiveness, and transparency. And I guess I'll just sort of open it up to the floor again for people that want to make specific comments or have specific questions about those sections.
Bruce, Philip here, perhaps just a comment before that on sort of structure of the document as it is.
Sure.
I think the additions that you made and that Liz has included subsequently in the latest document you sent out, I think, were all very useful. It helps set the review precisely, I think, where it should be in terms of the relation to various board statements, the reason for it, a section that comes from the minutes of the so that it comes from the bylaws, the 20 recommendations from the council review. All that, of course, tends to shunt what is the core of the terms of reference towards the end of the document. And I think it might just be a useful, perhaps a suggestion to Liz when she relooks at this, is to consider what parts of the new document, now some 12 pages long, may be more appropriately placed as an annex to the document rather than coming up front of the document. Clearly, some is needed up front in order to give a new reader a sense of purpose and direction. But there's a balance between that, I think, and boring them stupid before they get to the...
I think that's right. I think the purpose at the moment, as I see it, Philip, is partly getting the context right for us to develop the terms of reference. And then once we have those terms of reference, you stick them in the front. So perhaps look at it from that point of view.
Yeah.
And Bruce, it's Marilyn. I have a comment.
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn.
I'm holding a proxy for Grant, and I want to just note that Grant had submitted some comments, and I think Ross had reiterated a similar point in a posting that he made. I do think that we are right now... trying to get our arms around the relevant information, as you said, that we need in order to develop the terms of reference. I appreciate the fact that Maria sent a formal statement that was given by the staff to the board that led to the development of the resolution, but I'm looking for ensuring that our document has place and that we are given access to any other background discussions or opinions or issue statements or papers or even board discussions that have addressed the effectiveness of the SO, et cetera, so that we can incorporate that background into our terms of reference.
Liz or Maria, did you want to comment on that specific request? Is there material that's available, or have we got it all that we've got everything that's there?
It's Liz here. As far as I can tell, I spoke about this with Marilyn yesterday. As far as I can tell, we have all that is available. I have not been able to cite anything else that would help us further here. Perhaps that will come out in the board council call next week, but beyond that, I have nothing further.
Hi, Bruce. It's Grant Forsyth here, and hi, Liz. My question to Liz as a follow-up on that is, was there any discussion within the board, and if so, would you be able to extract that from the minutes as opposed to us having to wade through the whole minutes? Was there any useful discussion had at the board, or was it just, thank you, Maria, for your resolution, and we pass it?
Bruce, may I just help Grant on that answer quickly?
Yep, sure.
Grant, yesterday I went back through, and I'm happy to. I had prepared a draft email for everyone. I will send that around later on. I had it ready, which cut the captioning from the Luxembourg board meeting. It captures the 15th of July 2005 initiation of the GNSO review, and it also captures the 18th of October 2004 GNSO council review terms of reference. So I have that ready to send. I'm sorry, I should have sent that sooner, but I have it ready in my draft email box here.
Thank you. Bruce, it's Grant. Can I, seeing I've joined the call, and my apologies for being late, but I was enjoying myself, can I jump in if you're at this stage back to discussing the general terms of reference? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, we're sort of into item two of the agenda, which is basically... I've just sort of given some of the background. I've asked people for input on what they would like to see as a sort of end result, and now we're just into the detail, I guess, is getting comments. There's, at the moment, we have sort of four sections, one called representativeness, one called authority, one called effectiveness, and one called transparency. They're kind of, if you like, the core of the terms of reference we have before us at the moment. I'm really asking for feedback on that. I mean, have we got the right headings? Should we have more headings? You know, it's just the floor's open.
Okay. If I could speak to that, the section which I'd like to first contribute to is the section on scope. And I've thought a bit more about this, and my thinking arises from reviewing the questions which have been put out there kind of under the various headings you've just mentioned, representativeness, etc. And I think it was useful for Liz to do that, but what it highlighted for me is the need, and I think the scope is the place to put this. What I think needs to happen is that the review needs to be grounded in the, and what I'll just use the word objective, of what the GNSO as a policy council is. And
so
let me
just
flesh that out a bit more, if I may. I've spoken to a number of people about ICANN, etc. And ICANN is a reasonably unique model in so much that the board does not develop policy. The staff does not develop policy. There are specific SOs who are tasked with developing policy, and the board really is in the position of adopting that policy or sending it back to the SO for reconsideration. And so that's one, I think, quite reasonably unique factor or construct within ICANN. Another unique construct within ICANN is the bottom-up model, particularly when it's linked to the first construct which I mentioned. And I think it's necessary when an independent person comes to review the GNSO and seek to identify opportunities for improvement, which I, from my perspective, is the what this review is about and hopefully the positiveness that will come from it. But I think when that party comes to review the workings of the GNSO and to a certain extent the GNSO in and of itself within the ICANN model, they need to be grounded and they need to be directed to be grounded within the construct, the approach that is ICANN, because it is, in my experience anyway, reasonably unique. And so my concrete suggestion to Liz in the next draft is that aspect be articulated in the scope. And I, in my previous email posting, I suggested, for instance, that the by way of background document, that the particular relevant sections of the white papers, green papers, and also the most recent ENR review, the relevant sections of those papers that deal with the role, as it were, of the GNSO, that they be explicitly included in the background material to the terms of reference. I've thought more about it, and I think that it would be useful to have that within the scope, because I do think I get concerned, I guess, when I see terms which I think are fine at this stage before they get into terms of reference, but I get concerned when I see terms like fairness or appropriateness or sufficient. They're all terms which mean something to me but may mean something completely different to someone else. So I'll stop at that point.
So, Grant, if I can just comment on that, and I think Ross raised this in his comments, was what's the definition of fairness. So I had a look at the bylaws. It's actually not defined anywhere, but it's used everywhere. So I'm wondering, how would you arrive at that definition? Are you saying you arrive at that definition from the green papers and things? Are you, or?
Well, can I preface my answer, Bruce, by saying in my world, which I live in every day, which is the regulatory world, I absolutely reject anyone utilizing that word, because I think it's such an emotionally loaded and ill-defined word that what you might think is fair, I think is quite the opposite. So I think it's a very problematic word, and I have suggested that it be struck out. But leaving the word itself and what lies behind that, the similar sorts of words which I've also mentioned, if there is the thought to direct the reviewer to consider the workings of the GNSO along those sorts of lines, then what needs to absolutely happen is to set the framework within which such a question of fairness, for instance, can be struck. And without that context, without the framework, then such terms are irrelevant, in my view.
And Bruce, it's Marilyn, I'd like to speak on that point as well, and in support of that. I strongly agree with the fact that ICANN is very unique, and I've observed that it sometimes seems that we can take that uniqueness for granted and not make it very, very clear, particularly when new people or independent bodies come in to do an assessment. I think the additional documentation that Grant proposed would be extremely useful, probably even useful to us to review ourselves, but would be very useful for the independent entity in understanding what led to the creation of ICANN and why ICANN is so unique and needs to remain so unique.
Bruce, may I come in when Marilyn is finished?
Yep, if you finish, Marilyn.
I'd like to be added to the queue as well, please, Bruce.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be added to the queue.
Let me just catch up on those. So it was Ross, there was Liz, who else was there?
Tim Ruiz.
Oh, Tim Ruiz. Thanks, Tim.
Bruce, this is Mike, if I could get in as well.
Sure. Okay, go ahead, Liz.
I just wanted to say thank you to Grant for posing those things. Grant, there's something we have to be careful here, which is the conflation, I think, of documentation that would be provided to an independent person that would enable them to do the job. And I agree with you completely to provide that background material, which is, of course, in the process of being pulled together, and it's not in an inconsiderable task to put all of those documents in the right place, in the right order, with the right referencing. That's just to reassure you that is actually taking place. With respect to specific kinds of words, where words are used within the bylaws, which include the ones that you've mentioned, which are fairness, appropriateness, I think that I would like to have a little more discussion with respect to the way in which the, Marie's points were brought up about the objectives of the review. The review objectives are, in a sense, set by the bylaws, so I think perhaps we just need a little more thinking around that. I think it's perfectly feasible and possible to define terms as you're using them, and then measure them as you're going through. And if we come back to Ross's points about perception, which he made in the previous round of commentary, I think it's important that the perceptions of fairness are captured, and that if we were to ask a wide variety of people what they thought about such things as fairness, then we'd get some quite good ideas around there. So I just want to balance those two views there.
Thanks, Liz. Ross?
Two things. I think, as Liz points out, it's very, based because I pointed out earlier, it's kind of circular there, but, measuring perceptions is one thing, and I think it's very, very important, but that's only going to get us so far. And in support of Grant's point, I think to the extent where we can focus on our capability to support the concepts of fairness through action. In other words, do we have structures in place that support those objectives? Rather than analyzing or trying to quantify whether or not we are indeed acting fairly, we should be examining those policies and processes. Similarly, for all of these other very loose concepts like appropriateness and stability and so on.
Yeah, I mean, most of the bylaws, Ross, as far as I can tell, because I've quoted them word for word pretty much in the document as it is, they do use fairly general terms. You know, the constituencies are meant to operate in an open and transparent manner consistent with procedures to ensure fairness. So
certainly.
Yeah, they use those very open terms. Yeah.
Yeah, and what I mean by that is, for instance, in judging whether or not the GNSO is behaving fairly, we should look not only to seek to kind of inventory those perceptions, but also to, as an example, we have provisions that allow for the creation of new constituencies. To me, that's a very, that exemplifies fairness to the extent that that capability actually exists. So we should seek to quantify whether or not that capability practically exists.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question in itself, I think, is this current structure optimal? It's interesting that no one has proposed forming a constituency since actually the formation of the original Names Council. So the mechanism's there, but it's never been used. You know, does that mean that everything's okay, or does that mean the mechanism's too hard? You know, I don't know.
I would kind of differ with a friend from our Dutch friend from New Zealand, Loop or something like that, trying to get something for non-commercial individuals or private parties, and they wouldn't let him into the non-commercial because some of the small people might run as a website where they went that might have some commerce. But he attended a number of meetings and spent a lot of time trying to get something started for that group.
He
right.
did, Bob, but if you remember the timing on that, the at-large was not in place at that time. And, you know, I think the other thing that we, not to dwell too much on this particular issue because we can take it up in the review, but there are other structures that people should participate in ICANN through, not only the GNSO, and I think that's something we have to keep in mind as we look at evaluating, assessing RSO, that we coexist in a larger world with two other SOs and an at-large organization.
Yeah, I recognize that was an outcome of that. I'm not sure that Loop, or help him with his name, would agree that the ELAC satisfied what he was looking for.
Okay.
May I talk about that?
Sorry, who was that?
May I talk about that?
No. Well, I'll just add you to the queue because I've actually got a couple of other people in the queue as well, so I'll
okay.
come back to you. But, Tim Ruiz?
Thanks, Bruce. I apologize. I've been listening to the conversation. I haven't been able to respond until now. I'm traveling. So I want to kind of put my comments in some of the early in regards to some of the earlier discussions before I have to drop off here. One of the concerns that I had about the terms of reference was that it didn't seem to me to be specific enough regards to the staff support, and I added those comments have been added to the document that Ross has submitted, but specifically the staff support as it's described in Section 4 of Article 10. The terms of reference kind of, I think it talked about interaction or it talked about resources, but didn't get specific. So I felt that was important. And then I just wanted to respond briefly to I think some comments that Bob had made in regards to the number of active voters in the registrar's constituency and just that, you know, as that kind of thing is reviewed as far as authority and representativeness is considered, that although at times the number of registrars voting on an issue is small, the number of names or registrants that are directly or indirectly represented by those voters is very large. And I would hope that would be something considered during the review.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Mike Pelage?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. If I could just follow up on one of the points that Tim made that I think is very important. I think right now ICANN has about 500 registrars that are accredited. Now, according to Bob, there are upwards of, I believe, 59 registrars.
Actually, I just checked. It's 48.
48. Okay, so let's look at around 50 then. So what Tim was saying is by a pure numerical analysis, depending upon how you look at the numbers, one would say that there are only 10% of the registrars that have been accredited that are actively participating within the registrar constituency. However, when you look at the names under management, I think that number is upwards of 90%, if not greater. So again, I think one of the things, and this gets back to, I think, Grant's point of how one could look at numbers and it's just important to sort of look at it from multiple dimensions. So that's the first point I wanted to make. The other point I wanted to follow up on goes back to Ross's comments about perception and how one will evaluate this process. One of the more difficult things that I have had serving on the ICANN board is responding to a lot of the questions from my fellow board members about the GNSO. And with regard to perception, a lot of people perceive it as a noisy place where there's, if you will, a lot of discussion, acrimony, whatever you would want to look at it. And the one thing that I constantly remind my fellow directors of is a phrase that Stuart Lin used to say, that a noisy ICANN is a healthy ICANN. So that when we go to a meeting and there's lots of, if you will, passion, discussion, heated discussion, I don't necessarily view that as a negative. I view that actually as the ICANN process at work. So again, I think that's one of the things from a perception standpoint that the council needs to be aware of, and hopefully, you know, not only from the board but from a third-party analysis, just to show how, you know, again, another perception here. There's been some discussion on the board list regarding new TLDs and some of the efforts that are currently underway by staff. The point has been raised, well, you know, how will we gauge this, or how will we weight the recommendations coming from the GNSO when you look at the fact that registries and registrars would in theory have an inherent, if you will, an economic interest in more of these things being added because they have more things to sell. Again, what I like to point out is that, you know, the GNSO has many voices, staff is looking for many different things, so before we jump to any conclusions, we need to let the process work out, but these are some of the preliminary questions that are being raised by at least some of the board members. The one thing that I, again, remind them of is that the GNSO is inherently designed to have these counterbalancing views or viewpoints. Again, ISOC, for example, they don't have a, when people participate in ISOC, they have to provide a statement of interest. It's not a conflict of interest. It is a statement of interest. And one of the things that I think is important is a lot of the people that are participating with ICANN participate because they have an interest at stake. You know, whether it's, you know, Tim or Ross, if they didn't work for their respective registrars, I doubt they'd be on this call. That doesn't mean that because they have an interest, their viewpoint or their comments should not be taken. I think it just needs to be noted and, again, if you will, weighted in any sort of overall process. So those are, I think, again, the things of perception and, again, some of the noise, which I view as healthy, I just wanted to put on the record.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting comment you made about the perception, because I've heard this a number of times on any one issue, and that's a new TLDs is often one. Sometimes I hear that it might be the business constituency will all not want new TLDs because there's an intellectual property issue, and there's kind of these sweeping statements, or registrars will want heaps of new TLDs because they can sell more and so on. But the reality is it shows a lack of understanding of those individual constituencies, because I know amongst, I'm sure Marilyn would confirm, there are probably members of the business constituency that can see a business in having a new TLD, so they probably want them. And there are probably registrars that think that they've got a set of corporate customers and they service the corporate market, and they're not going to sell any more names to those guys. You know, their business is about looking after the names they've got well, and so on. So there's actually a lot of diversity within the constituencies that isn't apparent to people from outside, I think.
Yeah, and if I could just follow up on that, Bruce, that goes back to my comments earlier in the call when I talked about the depth of recommendations coming forward. Having that, if you will, difference within constituencies would help, I think, in validating the end result that the GNSO Council comes to. Because if you don't have that depth, the perception of second-guessing is, I think, a concern. So,
Bruce, may I add a comment when you're ready, please?
Okay, I'll add you to the queue. Norbert.
Yes, I just wanted to share some of my memories when the question was raised about individual members. also in the context of representativeness, the question was asked whether there is an openness for individuals to participate. And actually, it is true that there was this effort from a person from New Zealand, especially, to create an individual user's constituency for which there was finally no place to go, because the non-commercial constituency was for organizations, and finally the at-large structures also is not so much for individuals but for the structures as we have it now, with regional organizations. So the individual's place is, I think, until now, still a question which comes up rightly from time to time.
Okay, thank you, Norman. Liz.
Yes, Bruce, I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to my analysis of what both Michael and Ross and others have said. The challenge with this work, if I hear you correctly, if I hear you collectively together, is the quality of the methodology we use to do the analysis, the tools we use, and the measures we use. And I hear very specific recognition of uniqueness, of loose concepts, of difficult definitions, and I think the harder work that we have ahead of us in having this review work really, really well to deliver the recommendations that people expect revolve around establishment of really good methodology and really good tools for collecting data, really good statistics, really good analysis that is based in fact, and then it's based on very sound interviewing methodology, and I'll be spending a lot of time working on that side of the review, and I want to reassure everybody that that work is going to be undertaken, and anything that comes out will be based on methodology that is available and is testable and is verifiable, and I do that from an academic background rather than a commercial or any other kind of background. I just want to reassure people that that work will be done.
On that particular topic, which probably brings us on to kind of item three of the agenda, is just perhaps a little bit of discussion about methodology.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first questions I've got is regarding concerns around, I guess, confidentiality or anonymity of input. In the past, the GNSO has always maintained the approach that whether it's policy or doesn't really matter what the issue is, people can submit via public comments, people can submit via registrars and so on, but you are named as the person making the comments. Now, is there a sense, and I'm interested in people's views on this, is there a sense that the way a review like this should be conducted? So, for example, if Liz was doing an interview, there'd be a record of interview, so it would be, you know, interview John Smith, this is what John Smith said. Or would those interviews be kind of combined and said, well, here's a report on, you know, we interviewed these 100 people, we're not saying who they are, and this was the collective outcome. Just interested in perhaps establishing that ground rule right up front, whether people feel that we should continue the way we've done things in the past, or whether the review would be better if people were able to be anonymous in what they say.
And Bruce, it's Marilyn to speak on methodology broadly, and then
yep.
I'll speak on this topic, but you may want to take a cue on this.
I'd like to join that second cue, Bruce, please.
Yeah, with okay. Tony Harris also.
And Philip also.
And
Stubbs also.
Hang on, slow down. That's too many at once.
How about everybody?
Yep, I had Marilyn and Ross. Who came after that?
Philip.
Philip.
Tony Harris.
Tony Harris.
Bob Connolly.
Bob Connolly. Ken Stubbs. Anyone else?
And Paul Age.
Okay, and what I'd suggest you do when you speak to this is perhaps cover the general topic as well as my specific question, given the length of the queue, so we don't have to go around it again. So I'd ask you to talk on perhaps what your view is regarding the kind of confidentiality, anonymity, and just any other comments you have about methodology. But go ahead, Marilyn.
Well, my first comment about methodology is that I think that we should be careful in our choice of methodology. I don't really believe statistical analysis and the organizational development work that I've done professionally. I would not recommend using statistical analysis very heavily in a group like ICANN, and I'll use as an example, I think, the excellent illustration that was given about participation by the number of registrars, yet the bulk of the registered names are reflected by, so a pure statistical analysis would perhaps skew representativeness, as well as probably with the business constituency, which is heavily populated by trade associations, as is typical in business life. So methodology, I think, I'd like to hear a lot more about, not on this call, and I'd like us to be able to dialogue about it online. Secondly, on the question of anonymity, I have two concerns about anonymous contributions. It's very easy to turn a evaluation into a witch hunt, and I think people have to be accountable for the comments that they're making, because we are trying to engage in continual improvement. That is what we signed on to in Evolution and Reform, and that's what this is supposed to be about. So in order to improve, we need to know what our problems are or what our opportunities are, and to be able to talk about the best ways to address them. There may be optimal solutions that aren't affordable. There may be less than optimal solutions that get us 90% of the way there. And if we aren't in a open dialogue in taking input and hearing input, I'm very concerned that we will end up with a lot of, a list of 200 complaints that put the staff in an incredibly difficult position of, well, I heard this, well, I heard that, but we can't address it because we're not really engaged in the process. So I'm very cautious about anonymity. I think it's possible to aggregate comments in a way that still provides sufficient transparency, and we could talk perhaps more about that.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn. Ross?
Yeah, I'll be quick. I'll let others make the argument because I sense that's what's supposed to happen. And just state that I don't think that the concept or the or facilitating anonymous submissions to this process has a lot of place in this process. I think one of ICANN's strengths is the degree of transparency and fairness that are built into the processes, and anonymity really kills a lot of that. Putting a name to your comments really forces a certain level of responsibility, adds a certain cost to those submissions, and I think that cost is actually very, very valuable in that it makes the individual think twice about what they say before they say it. So, to the extent that that's removed, I will be a much happier individual.
Okay, Philip?
Yes, I mean, on confidentiality, I think absolutely. I mean, the top-level purposes review does have a purpose? Can it be more effective? And I think in answering those questions, there's every reason for openness and in terms of submissions there. I think really the burden of proof or whatever should be on the other side if anybody needs to make a strong argument in favor of confidentiality. I think in general methodology, I think clearly yes, I think Marilyn's comments mattered. You know, obviously statistics have got to be thorough, not tunneled. But let's bear in mind, I think, that some of the excellent statistical analysis that we did during the council review, helped us to some extent win the argument on three reps versus two reps, because we demonstrated a number of things that simply had been presumed to be the case that we demonstrated were no longer true.
Yeah, I think... maybe statistics, another way of saying things is having facts, and I think one of the things that was very useful in the GNSO review, council review, was that we did collect a huge amount of factual information about, you know, these were the policies, these were the meetings, these were the different things we did for outreach, and so collecting all those facts together meant the reviewer actually had some hard material to work through rather than just purely relying on perceptions, because if you say to someone, my perception was that, the GNSO only held one meeting this year, and the facts say you had 10. So it's useful to have the facts as background.
Okay.
Tony Harris.
Oh, it's okay. I don't have anything to add. What people have said before is I have nothing to add, so I'll step off.
Bob Connolly. Bob, are you there? Might be on mute. I'll jump to Ken Stubbs. I'll come back to Bob. Ken Stubbs?
Yeah.
I was muted. That's the problem.
Came back on. Bob, are you there?
Oh, okay, this is the coordinator. I'm going to open his line back up again. He had some static on there. One moment.
If he doesn't come back on.
Okay. Your line's open again there, Bob.
I was muted. I wanted to comment, and I sent an email to Bruce to get me in the queue before you brought this particular issue up, but since it's been raised again in this context, of these so-called 500 registrars, I think we need to recognize, and I think this is a job that the registry of registrars must do, recognize that some of the members who are voting represent perhaps as many as 50 different chill or phantom registrars. In addition, we have things where NSI has acquired other registrars and a limit to voting only for one, in one name. That became obvious when we had a kind of a straw vote during the meeting in Luxembourg, and there were quite a few more hands raised than we had voting members present because of that discrepancy. I think there were three or four votes cast by NSI. That's all I had to say on the subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Ken Stubbs?
Yeah, and I hope my comments are taken as I'm trying to emphasize here. I think the concept of openness and transparency is very important. At the same point in time, I think that we have what boils down to being a bit of a hypocrisy when we talk about something like that. Let me give you examples of what I'm talking about. If we're going to take openness and transparency to the ultimate, then all conversations by any outside parties representing any constituencies with board members should be fully documented. Any lobbying like this, I could just see a situation where it would create an environment that would make it very difficult for people who might possibly be concerned about either retribution, persecution, and so forth, to make any frank and open comments. Now, I think the quality of the person taking the comments and their capacity to filter and to understand where the perspective is of the person who's commenting comes into play here. I think that people need to be able to feel free to discuss issues and concerns with the person that they're being interviewed with without, and I think you have to leave some leeway there. I think that's what professionalism is. So I think we're getting far too esoteric if we put constraints on the interviewers that don't allow them to solicit comments, for lack of a better term, off the public record from people that they interview. It becomes a beauty contest. People, in many cases, are just afraid to say something for fear that it's going to come back to haunt them, because in many cases, what people will say could be construed or taken the wrong way. I've seen over the last 7 years or 6 years in ICANN, I've seen a lot of circumstances where public comments have been taken because of cultural interpretations the wrong way. And you spend an enormous amount of time mending fences for a comment that, frankly, inflection, you know, the way that people talk and use their voices in many cases implies something entirely different than could be put on paper. And I think we're going to be dealing, and whoever's going to be taking these interviews is going to be dealing with a lot of cultures. And it's quite difficult for members of some cultures to put something out that can be, in effect, documented in writing that comes out on paper the way that it was originally meant orally. So I hope we at least consider this.
Okay, I think that's my understanding. What you're saying, Ken, is that there's a difference perhaps between doing a tape recording of an interview with someone and making that tape recording public versus being clear that you interviewed such and such a person, such and such a date, and here were their substantive concerns. So I think what I heard others saying is the substantive concerns that really go into effect the outcome of a review need to be attributed to people. That's not quite the same thing as saying that every single word they say needs to be taped and transcribed. That, you know, I think that's the balance that we're striking there.
I'd like to support Ken's statement, Tony Harris.
Okay. Do you also agree with my interpretation of that, Tony, or
yes,
or not?
I think if you're interviewed, a transcript word by word should not be made public.
Yes. Okay. But the fact that that a person was interviewed in their major concerns, that should be made public. Is that
right? Yeah. Correct? Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mike Pallage.
I agree with what you just said there, Bruce. And again, perhaps my email a couple of hours ago put this issue on the table. So I would just like to clarify. One, I do think open and transparent are important principles, and one of the reasons I'm participating on this call and, if you will, having my comments recorded to be MP3'd in a couple of hours from now. So I think that is important. My original comments were in trying to sort of maximize board participation. There are some mm-hmm. directors that are not very vocal during public meetings, but which on the list are more verbal. So again, I think in balancing everything that I've heard here from the different council and constituency members is that I think anonymity does need to sort of, if you will, take a back seat here, and having people put their comments on the record is really a paramount concern. And I really do like your approach of not a literal transcript or not a transcript, but if you will, this is who I interviewed, and here are the a summary of their concerns. I think is a nice middle ground or consensus approach to really maximizing the benefit or maximizing this process.
Thank you, Mike. Okay. Is there anything else anyone wants to cover at this point? To my mind, I've kind of achieved what I think were the main objectives. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, in terms of, I tend to agree with the anonymity.
Sorry, we can't hear.
Sorry, let me talk right into the microphone. I tend to agree with what's been said about anonymity and such so far. However, I do have one concern. If you take an interview with someone and then say this is what that person has said, I'm wondering, does that person have a chance to review it and modify the interviewer's understanding of it?
I think that would be perfectly reasonable. To give you an idea, that I tend to, sometimes we have guests at a council meeting and Glenn takes the minutes of what they've said. I nearly always ask Glenn to go back and check with that person to see whether those minutes accurately reflect what they've said. So I think that's
okay. So at that point, with sort of that consideration, that if you're paraphrasing someone, they get to check it before it's published, I'm very comfortable with what's been discussed.
Yes, I think that's good, a good approach. So I think the fourth agenda item was kind of preparing for the interaction with the board. I think what I was trying to achieve in this call is just get people's general understanding of what the goal is, what the kinds of outcomes we'd like to see, you know, setting the context. A number of people have submitted comments to the council list. A number of people on this call said that they were, their constituencies were thinking about it and were intending to provide input. So I think we probably need to wait, or, you know, it's sounds like we need about 7 days to sort of get all the different input together and to create a draft terms of reference, which we would then submit to the board a week before their meeting. So that's, I guess, is what I would propose as the next steps, that people really provide substantive comments on terms of reference to the council list or to Liz. And if Liz can produce a fresh draft, I think, Liz, effectively you may well have to create a few iterations so people can sort of see how the document's progressing a bit. But we would aim to create a version by 7 days from now, and that version we will send to the board as kind of the current draft in preparation for the call with the board.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. I will do that. I thank everybody who sent me comments either on the list or directly or has provided telephone commentary. I just wondered if I could check something with you, Bruce, before, just to make sure I've got the process right.
Yeah, sure.
Philip made a point, and if I'm going back through my notes here, Philip, can I just double check with you? You said the additions are very useful in terms of developing the terms of reference, but we need to now shift those into an annex of the document. Just so that everybody is aware, the board governance committee and the board have a copy of the paper as it stands, and I imagine that board members will be spending some time, if they're interested, reviewing that. I will then, I think, take Philip's suggestions and shift things to an annex to make sure we have it all in the one place, but so that the core of the document comes to the front and we really start to identify the precise terms of references, the terms of reference that we would wish to discuss with the board in 2 weeks' time. Is that acceptable to everyone?
Well, can I suggest a slightly different approach, Liz? Can I suggest we keep it in the current format for the next draft?
Yes, sure.
Because I think, again, I think it's important that at this stage, while we're actually developing the terms of reference, that we have the background context up front. I'd really like the board to actually read that. The danger of at this stage throwing into an appendix is that's where it will stay and people won't even read that. But I think the second draft, which is kind of the draft that eventually will be made public, because when we formally submit it to the board then would publish it on the ICANN website. You know, there's a public comment period and all that sort of stuff. Definitely for that stage, it's got to be much more focused, saying, you know, here's the two or three pages that have the terms of reference.
Okay, so I'm clear now. That's fine. Thank you.
Bruce, it's Grant here.
Yep.
If I might put quite the opposite suggestion to that that you've just put to Liz, my request of Liz in our last council call was that the next version be a draft of the terms of reference. My reason for that is that the paper that Liz has produced today is a paper. It is not the terms of reference, which at the end of the day, the board we will present to the board and the board will sign off on. And the concern I have is that I think the paper that Liz has produced today is an excellent thought piece, starter for this sort of conversation. But, for instance, it has raised within it questions which a number of us have fed back to Liz, on such wording as, for instance, fairness. And I think Liz now has a feel for what some of us, anyway, consider is problematic in those sorts of words. But I think they were useful, and I have no criticism in them being used in the manner which they have today. I would be concerned, for instance, after this discussion, and I would wish to run it to ground, if you will, if in a terms of reference, something that was going to be put to the prospective reviewer, that the word fairness appeared again. And if it did, then I would wish to make further submissions to Liz and the board as to how a word fairness be replaced with, depending on its context, what it is that is seeking to be seen to be fair. Is it access? Is it cost? Is it some other impediment? Is it whatever it is? Fairness can always be replaced, in my experience, with a more descriptive, more factually based comparator. And so that is all by way of support for my view that we need to move reasonably quickly to a terms of reference draft that we can assist Liz, if she's the primary holder of the pen, to draft and finesse with input from ourselves and the board.
And can I follow up on that, Bruce? I really just clarify that under the word fairness, you know, maybe it's a parenthetical, but it says, for example, and then list the things that are going to be evaluated. It might be, for instance, language translation. Fairness might mean access. When the independent consultant yet to be retained undertakes a review, they might find that a barrier to deciding to participate is lack of translated information or lack of knowing who to contact. But fairness won't capture that.
I just wanted to just step back to what Grant was saying, so we're not speaking across purposes. I was just talking about the order, I think, rather than the content. I'm agreeing with the content. There needs to be a clear section, which is the terms of reference. I was merely saying that perhaps for the next draft we keep the contextual stuff up front, which is, you know, this is what the purpose of the GNSO is, and so on, and then have the terms of reference versus have the terms of reference. From what I'm hearing you saying, you want to keep that now as a totally separate document and have this document be called the big background or briefing paper. Am I hearing correctly?
You asking me, Bruce? Grant?
Yes. Yeah, I'm just trying to clarify what your point was, because I'm not...
My suggestion is that we move away from a discussion paper. What Liz has produced us is a discussion paper, nothing more, nothing less. And it is the precursor to her now going away at some point and drafting a draft terms of reference.
Okay.
And I think, you know, she is now in a position to do that. I do not wish to encourage her to produce another version of a discussion paper. And so my first point is I think Liz should be tasked with producing a draft terms of reference. To your second point, with whether the draft terms of reference should contain within them, in the body, the sorts of explanation and background and reference, etc., my personal view is no. I would prefer, given that I'm asking for a draft terms of reference, that they be put in the form that eventually we expect to deliver them in. And if that is in a form of appendix or annex or whatever, then they should be put into an annex. I'm not concerned so much that people won't read them. I think we need to, Liz needs to start showing us what her view of a terms of reference are, and in my view, the sorts of detail which I think are necessary, but our detail, much of it should be in the form of an annex.
Okay, so others have a view on that?
Philip, here, Bruce. I understand what you're trying to achieve in terms of getting the mindset of the leadership being the board next time around on this document in the right set. I have a thought it's not impossible to do both things if the existing document already has some area of duplication anyway. I would have thought that perhaps the core of those important learning points before you get to the TOR could perhaps yet be incorporated rather briefly at the beginning of the document, and the more lengthy stuff like verbatim cut and paste from the bylaws could yet be in an annex. But the other comment I also wanted to make was that the treatment that we give to the GNSO Council, 20 recommendations, also a typo in existing document, this is 18, because I think at least sort of three of those have been completed, and the rest are sort of either incomplete or maybe have been done, but nobody's actually looked at that and said so. And perhaps that also needs to be captured somehow so that it's clear. I think it's important to say, look, you know, there's already these things that have been well thought through, and you know, action is outstanding, so that that is captured as part and parcel of what the terms of reference are going to be, so that we're only going to be looking at that is new, not work that is already clearly identified.
Bruce, could I just seek a point of clarification when everyone else is finished?
Yeah, sure. Let's have, anyone else want to?
Bruce, this is Alec.
Yeah, go ahead, Alec.
I support Grant's view. I believe that, I've just looked at the proposed timeline, I believe we will run out of time if we're not careful, if we don't actually start work on the draft terms of reference. And one of the things that I would like to see early work on is the scale of the consulting assignment, in particular, the list of prospective interviewees, so we can identify how big this thing is or how big we think it ought to be. Obviously, the board has the final decision on that, but we should, at an early stage, identify who we think should be interviewed. We know from experience that people are more likely to provide input if they're interviewed verbally than if they are required to post to a list, right?
Yes, correct.
And so I think we need to make sure that we actually interview, the consultant interviews all of the people who need to be interviewed.
This is Avery. Can I get a comment in?
Yes, go ahead, Avery.
Okay, my comment is actually on the word fairness. And actually, I'd like to argue against the removal of the word. Part of its strength, I believe, is in its subjectivity and the fact that for something to be fair, it needs to be seen that from both sides of the question. And therefore, I think any time somebody tries to sort of encode a hard objective criteria, they end up only being able to look from one side of an issue. So I'd be very wary of something that took out any notion of fairness. And I think leaving in that two-sided is actually very important.
Okay. So what I'm hearing, Liz, I guess, and I don't have a problem with what Grant has suggested, I'm hearing that we treat the document that we currently have as a discussion paper, and we can, it may well have reached its
end of its life.
It doesn't need any further editing. And then we now start drafting a separate, much more condensed document that's just focused on the terms of reference,
okay.
So that what we present to the board would be both of those documents.
In that case, Bruce, if I may, I just need everyone to refer to their calendars just so we get this timing right. Today is the 25th. If we were to give the board 7 days advance notice, it means I must send this twofold document on the 1st of September. Yeah?
Yes.
That means working back from there, if anybody has substantive comments, could I please ask for them by, and I'm conscious of Alex's point too about timing, could I ask for them by close of business on Sunday, which will give me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to collate the comments, make adjustments, separate the documents out, and be able to distribute that to council members on, I'm thinking, Wednesday, Brussels close of business time. But that gives us only overnight for then that paper to go to the board.
And I'm sorry, can I just clarify? We're talking about the go to the board for our informal discussion with the board, for our call on the 8th.
On the 8th, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, our call is actually on the 8th, that's correct.
At the same time. Bruce, I think that if I just go through that timeline quickly again, close of business to me on Sunday the 28th, which would give me Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week to release the two-part document on close of business Brussels time on the 31st of August. That would only give us overnight to then and that allow the board to have 7 days for that. I don't see that as a problem because we still have a chance to review and revise, but that's what it's looking like in terms of timing.
Alec, may I speak?
May
I suggest that if Liz has trouble completing substance in the draft terms of reference in that time frame, that we at least have a complete framework so that we know what is in and we know what is missing.
Oh, Alec, I won't have any problem with the time frame. I'm just wanting to be clear with what people's expectations are. I want to meet people's expectations. I'm happy to have the complete framework ready.
Good.
Bruce, may I just follow up on one of Alec's questions there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Alec, you just made a comment about the scale of the consulting assignment and the list of prospective interviewees.
Yes.
I am, just so that everyone is aware, I'm also developing an operational plan to enable this work to happen, which takes into account resource implications for the organization. And then there's also a budget, and then there's all the other things that go on behind the scenes with this. After we've had the board call, I will be in a better position to provide more information about that. But there are some. Of course, there's time limitations. There's other external factors that need to be taken into account. But just be aware that that's happening.
Just to give people an idea of scale, is there a budget in the operating plan for this?
There's a budget in the operating plan, but I have to have some confirmation with Kurt about the quantum of that precise budget. Because then I would like to develop a budget that reflects some both dollar contingency and time contingency for the work to be done. And part of what I'm thinking about in terms of listening to what people's expectations are for recommendations is the way in which would approach the evaluation that would give people the kinds of recommendations they want for practical improvement. And that does require some thinking about the kinds and types of potential evaluators we might use. We also have to be very mindful that this is a very expensive exercise and we want to get the best value possible for the exercise and to conduct it as efficiently and not quickly because we want to do quick and dirty, but quickly because longer equals more cost.
Yes.
So I'm developing that at the same time, but I have been focusing on developing the rationale in the terms of reference and the analysis methodology first, and in the background I'm developing the budget and the scale and the scope. So Alec, just to...
Yeah, I think when it comes to interviewees, it's very much dependent on budget and...
Absolutely, but it's also dependent on technology, and I am speaking with our technical staff in Marina Del Rey about ways in which we can use technology to minimize our cost and maximize our reach.
Bruce, it's Meryl. I'd like to...
Yeah, go ahead, Meryl.
I want to go back to something. I want to pick up on something that Liz said that takes me back to the opening comments. About my expectations. I'm not expecting concrete examples of how the business constituency can improve itself. I'm not expecting somebody to come in and be a paid consultant to improvements. I would expect things along the lines of broad suggestions, and that each constituency would develop its own self-improvement plan. Am I missing something? Because clearly, if we're hiring a team of people to provide hands-on organizational development to six very diverse constituencies, that's not only an overwhelming task, but not one that I think that constituencies will respond well to. On the other hand, if we're going to provide broad statements that are kind of goal statements, this constituency should seek to find ways to provide scholarships for membership fees for people from developing countries, or this constituency should seek to do outreach at all ICANN meetings. And then it's up to the constituency to actualize that plan. I feel more comfortable with that latter.
Marilyn and I hadn't reached that point. I think that there are some things in the materials that Bruce has put into the paper today that help us to answer that, but I can take that. I'll just go away and think about that a little bit more if you like, and we can come back to it.
Bruce, this is Alec. May I speak again?
I want to just clarify what I'm asking. Then yield the floor to you, Alec. I didn't think that staff, I welcome staff input, but I think I'm asking the council to comment on this as well.
I think my comment, let me just comment on that quickly, Marilyn, just from a bylaw point of view. There is a requirement to identify whether each constituency is still meeting its objectives, if you like. So there is a level of constituency. I would expect the review would say, this is the review I've done on business, this is the review I've done on registrars and so on. In other words, there's a review at that level. If you're saying, should the review end up spending a huge amount of time into the fine detail of how a specific constituency should do its voting or something, I think that's going down too many layers. But I just want to be clear that there is a requirement to review each constituency as a constituency.
And I'm actually not talking about the review, Bruce. I was making a comment about the suggestions or guidance that would be given back to constituencies on how to improve.
I think the suggestion should be rule-oriented,
not a step-by-step instruction manual.
I mean, it's no different to the recommendations we have for the council. The recommendations for the council are fairly high level at this stage.
Bruce, if I may, a comment on timing.
Yep, I'm hoping to try and... you mean for this call or...
No, for the submission.
Yep, go ahead.
And I'll make it quick in deference to your earlier concern, or your primary concern. Liz, I'm not sure that the Sunday night deadline works for... we've got people on vacation within the constituency that have flagged that they would like to provide comment into this process. And I suspect that it's just not going to happen for Sunday night.
As an Australian who's frankly not on vacation in August, that's lovely, Ross. All I'm saying is that the only reason I suggested those times and dates was that I did want to give the board sufficient time to read the documentation. If we push it harder and we push the deadlines out to account for that, then we have to, but it means that the board will have less than 7 days to read their documentation. And remembering we're not perfectionists.
Liz, can we at least push it out to Monday night for final input?
Yeah, sure.
But you'd still be preparing stuff based on the input you already have.
Oh, absolutely.
And also, my comment to Ross, I guess, is that this isn't the final point that you give input.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And I understand that. Yeah.
Yeah, getting to a point that we can have a dialogue with the board. The board will have further input. We can still provide input, so we're not talking a hard deadline here. It's not.
Okay.
And then let me also be clear: no sympathy for those that aren't on vacation and are just not submitting comments. So.
Thank you, Ross. So that means, Bruce, if I could just confirm, everyone will send me by close of business wherever you are on the 29th of August, and I will, in the meanwhile, put things together, and I will submit to you a paper for you to distribute to the board on the 1st of September.
Yep.
Correct? Got it.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, was there anything else anyone wants to raise?
Hi, Bruce, this is Alec again. I'm still on the same hobby horse, which is we have a benchmark for doing this sort of work, a smaller assignment which was done by Patrick Sherry. We know we have an idea of how much work was required and how much it cost. I think that for this larger piece of work, it would be helpful in looking at the terms of reference to understand how much money is available in the kitty so that we can make sure that we don't ask too much and get too little.
Yes,
yeah, and I think there's this undertaking to find that out, I think, at a high level. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, good.
And we could expect, you think, a week or...
Marilyn, what I might try to do, if this is satisfactory to everybody, is I might try to make sure that those little ducks are in a row by the time that I send it to the board, if that satisfies everyone, just so everyone knows where they are. If that's acceptable, I'll just do it that way.
Wait a minute, Liz, you're not sending it to the board, are you? I thought Bruce was.
The information that I will send to Bruce for him to send to the board.
Okay. I think what we're just on the budget thing, I think we're just looking for orders of magnitude. So we're talking about 10 or 100,000 or a million. So we're not sort of getting down to the dollars and cents.
No, that's right.
And Bruce, this is Mike. I mean, we did have, just by way of background, I was just pulling the minutes. I don't think the actual dollar amount showed up. But the board, in connection with Patrick Sherry's work, was provided an upper limit as to what was authorized in connection with his work. So I don't know if that helps in this discussion.
It would be helpful, Mike, to know the relative scale that the board sees for this exercise compared with what Patrick Sherry did.
put it this way, I won't speak for the board. Maybe that's a question you could, the council could address to the board on September 8th. I just did want to inform the people on this call that in connection with Patrick Sherry's work, there was an upper dollar amount limit that was provided in the board briefing papers as to what that effort would cost. So
yeah, so that was for the Patrick Sherry, and then I think Liz mentioned earlier, it's probably correctly addressed to Kurt initially, because Kurt actually has developed the budget, correct, Liz?
And yes, so that's right, and I'm working with Kurt on that.
Yeah, and the board's approved that budget, so
yeah.
Liz will contact Kurt and just get some clarity on that for us next week. Okay, is there anything else anyone wants to raise? Okay, well, thank you, everyone, for your time.
Thanks, everyone. Looking forward to your commentary.
Thank you, folks.
Thanks. Bye.